Support for this podcast comes from Smartwater. Want to get a little more from every sip? Smartwater Alkaline doesn't just taste crisp and pure. It's loaded with everything you need to perform at your best, whether you're running marathons or boardroom meetings. Elevate how you hydrate and pick up a Smartwater Alkaline today. To learn more, visit drinksmartwater.com.
Nolan is standing by.
Hey, Wacky Bruce!
Coming to you from an undisclosed location, this is the Bruce Exclusive. And here's your host, Bruce Nolan.
Ladies and gentlemen, boys and girls, children of all ages, welcome to another edition of the Bruce Exclusive, a Buffalo Rumblings podcast. I'm your host, Bruce Nolan. You can find me on Twitter and Instagram at Bruce Exclusive. Welcome back. I'm telling you, this is going to be the one. It's going to be the short one. It has to be the short one. I had a guest spot last night. I have a guest spot tonight. I'm recording this on Tuesday, March 19th at 7:10 p.m. Eastern time. And I have a significant thing happening tomorrow, so I can't record my podcast on Wednesday. It has to be a short one. I'm too busy for it to not be a short one. The Buffalo Bills signed Curtis Samuel right after my last pod dropped because they hate me. And by this time, it's already old news. You've moved on to the next thing, but I haven't had an opportunity to talk to you about it. Curtis Samuel, 3 years, $24 million, max $30 million. Yes, I think it's an upgrade over Gabe Davis. Yes, I like the fit. Yes, I like the versatility. Yes, I think he can be vertical. No, I don't think he has to be directly out of the slot. Does that cover everything? Is that all the takes? Did I cover all the takes? No, I don't think it changes anything for me in regards to wanting a wide receiver high in the draft, because it was never about just being a number two right now. It was about being a potential number one a year or two from now. Because someone asked me earlier this offseason if I'd be interested in restructuring Stephon Diggs' deal. I said, no, I don't want to restructure his deal because I want to retain the option to be able to get out if indeed he does start slowing down. If what we saw from Stephon Diggs was actually something that trends into this upcoming year, then I want to retain the option of being able to get out. So it was never just about getting a number two receiver right now, because I think it's wise not to draft someone, even if you drafted them in the first round, to not draft them and go, here you go, you have to be our number two receiver. You know who did that? The Buffalo Bills of old. They would draft a rookie and say, okay, you absolutely have to come in and be an impact starter. I know we drafted you in the third round, but you know, sorry about that. You have to, because we filled the holes on the team with draft picks. So I didn't want someone who you had to. If they great, you know, if they come in, they're great, then amazing. That's fantastic. But I didn't want them to have to. So I like the Curtis Samuel signing, because if you draft someone, even if you draft them in the first round, they don't have to be the number two, but you've retained the option, if they're good, for them to potentially be the number one sooner rather than later. So it was never about plugging a number two hole. It was about setting up an heir apparent to be the number one. And yes, I recognize that I just said plugging a number two hole because I'm 6 years old. I totally understand what I just did. And I hope you had a good laugh about it. So Curtis Samuel doesn't change that aspect of the desire for me, because it was never about we need a number two receiver right now. That was never my idea behind why I want to draft one. It's a really, really good class, and I think there are going to be players in the first and second round that profile as a type of player that could be a volume hog as a number one player for your team for a long time. And that's what I wanted. I wanted an heir apparent more than I wanted someone to plug in now. And now that you got Curtis Samuel, that need didn't change, because that need wasn't what was affected. Curtis Samuel's not going to be your number one, no matter what you think about him. Even the most ardent Curtis Samuel defenders aren't going to say he's going to take over for Stephon Diggs. I don't think it's what he is. But I think what he does give you is he gives you a versatile chess piece to play with on offense. And I'm in favor of that. I do think it's an upgrade in versatility skill set over Gabe Davis. Obviously, there are certain things that Gabe Davis is going to do better. I think run blocking is a big part of that, right? I think size matters because the Buffalo Bills don't have a lot of it. Gabe Davis was essentially their only size receiver, and now he's gone. And then you went and signed a 6'4", 220-pound monster in Mac Hollins for when you need exactly that. If that's what you're going for, oh, I need some size for this particular matchup, then you can use him. But he doesn't have to start for you. Obviously, in an ideal world, he's not starting for you. So that's my opinion on the Buffalo Bills signing Curtis Samuel. We are taking an early break, so I think maybe it's going to happen. Stick with me. We'll be right back.
Support for this podcast comes from Smartwater. Life moves pretty fast. Are you drinking water that can keep up? Smartwater Alkaline has everything you need to stay hydrated, no matter where your day takes you. Whether you're pitching a tent or your next big idea, Smartwater Alkaline can help you perform your best. It delivers a pure, crisp taste that makes it the perfect chaser after a big workout. Elevate how you hydrate and pick up a Smartwater Alkaline today. To learn more, visit drinksmartwater.com.
Welcome back, everybody, and thank you for joining me for this edition of the Bruce Exclusive, a Buffalo Rumblings podcast. I'm your host, Bruce Nolan. You can find me on Twitter and Instagram at Bruce Exclusive. Welcome back. We got an early ad break in. I think we're doing it. I think we're pacing for like a 20-minute pod, maybe a 15, 18-minute pod. It's going to happen, but not before we talk about this. Tell me if you've heard this, or tell me if you are this. First-round receiver is a must. That's a direct quote that I got from somebody on social media. I don't even care who they are. Just take one. He didn't say first round Bob Smith. First round receiver is a must. Here's another one. Every year we neglect a first round receiver. I'm tired of this bullshit and value nonsense. Draft one in the first round. End quote. I have a question for that mentality. If that's you, or if you know someone who's like that, do you care if they're actually good? Like, do you care if they're good? You just want a position in the first round. You don't care if a top 15 caliber player at defensive end falls because of a run on receivers, and you have that player or a day two value wide receiver as the choice. You don't care. Because you want a first-round receiver. If you could get Bob Smith at 28, you'd take him. Even if you could get Jerry West at 28 and then Bob Smith at 60. Because it was never about the player. It's about where you took them. So what I did was I decided to put this theory to the test. Because here's my theory. My theory is people say this, but overwhelmingly, the majority of people don't actually believe it. When actually faced with that type of distinction, they will choose the non-receiver player. Here are some examples that I outlined on social media specifically for this. The first example I said was, I said, you're the Bills. You're at pick 28. You must pick one of these players. Who is it going to be? The first set of two options was Leatu Latu or Keon Coleman. 65% of respondents said Latu. The second option was Byron Murphy or Roman Wilson. 74% of respondents said Byron Murphy. The third option was JPJ, Jackson Powers Johnson, or Ricky Pearsall. The last option was Tyler Newbin or Jalen Polk. So, Leatu Latu is a defensive end. Keon Coleman's a wide receiver. Byron Murphy is a defensive tackle. Roman Wilson's a wide receiver. Jackson Powers Johnson is an interior offensive lineman, specifically a center. Ricky Pearsall is a wide receiver. Tyler Newbin's a safety. Jalen Polk is a wide receiver. In each scenario, I outlined another position that could be construed as a need for the Buffalo Bills with a player who was clearly defined as being at least one, if not two, tiers above the wide receiver. And every single time, the majority of respondents said, yeah, I know it's a receiver, but I want this other player. Even in circumstances where you already have a starter in that spot. Byron Murphy is a three-tech defensive tackle. Ed Oliver's already there. Jackson Powers Johnson is a starter at center. Probably plug and play there. But Tim Graham just did a piece today on the Buffalo Bills' new starting center, Connor McGovern. But there were still a certain number of people who were willing to take the player who was popularly viewed as being at least a tier or two below the non-wide receiver simply because they were a receiver. So for some people, they really do mean it. Even if I told them, hey, you know, you could probably get that person in the second. I don't care. I want them in the first. Because there's something about a first-round receiver that signifies effort. That's why they want to do it. They want to do it because of effort. It's weird when you think about it, because Doug Marrone, former Buffalo Bills coach, had something on the wall of the Buffalo Bills training facility that said, don't confuse effort with results. And in a significant aspect of our sports fandom, all we care about are results. I'm going to pull a Buddy Nix now. Don't tell me about the labor pains, just show me the baby. Results, not effort. But all of a sudden, when it comes to things like this, we don't care about results anymore, we care about effort. Well, you know, the Packers never drafted a first-round receiver for Aaron Rodgers. Do you know how many good players Aaron Rodgers played with? Does it matter that they didn't spend a first-round pick on him? They had Davante Adams. They had James Jones. They had Jordy Nelson and Randall Cobb, all players who had really strong primes around Aaron Rodgers. But it doesn't matter what the results were because the effort wasn't there. And that's really what we're upset about. We're upset about the idea that if you draft one in the first round, at least you're trying. Which is weird. Because it's all of a sudden we shift. We care about results, 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 results. And then all of a sudden when it comes into this, we don't care about results anymore. We don't care about the good player. We care about the effort. And that's because it's tied to the narrative that the organization is, quote unquote, wasting Josh Allen. And they wouldn't waste them if they drafted a first round receiver. We don't even care if they're good. We just want the effort to be there. So maybe what we actually mean isn't overwhelmingly take a receiver in the first round no matter what. Because a significant majority of respondents on each one of those polls did not take the receiver over the higher tier prospect. Maybe we should reframe this conversation. Maybe we should say, I think there will be a receiver that matches the pick value there, and the receiver should get tiebreakers. So why don't we just say that? Because that's not the same statement as draft a receiver in the first round no matter what. I understand nuance is lost in a lot of fan communication, but it feels like this isn't a hard needle to thread for me. There is a significant gap. You could drive a truck through the nuance gap between take a receiver in the first round no matter what, and I think, based on projections, there is going to be a receiver who fits the value at 28, and given a tie, I think the tiebreaker should go to receiver. Those are not the same statement at all, because people have openly said, based on respondents to the Twitter poll, that the majority of fans will take the player clearly ranked higher versus the receiver clearly ranked lower. Now, some of them won't. But that means there is a huge overlap at some point between someone who's saying first round receiver no matter what and someone who actually means something different. And maybe the reason you're missing that difference is because you just want effort. Which is weird, because it's the complete opposite of the Jedi Order, right? Do or do not. There is no try. But apparently we don't care about do or do not. We don't care if we get the best receiver in the league. If they were drafted in the second round, you're still going to get hate. That's what happened with the Packers. Davante Adams was a second round pick, and all they could talk about was Aaron Rodgers never got a first round receiver. He got amazing receivers. Does it matter where they were drafted? Does anybody care that Puka Nacua was taken in the fifth? Well, you're going to get more likely to hit higher. Sure, I 100% agree with that. But if they hit, they hit. Isn't that what we want? No, we just want effort. We just want effort. And a lot of the people who are making that argument, just draft a receiver in the first round, they couldn't even give you, like, 3 to 5 options of players they think are going to be there that you would be happy with. Usually it's just do whatever you got to do. I had one person say, take Xavier Worthy. And I said, well, in the example that I outlined, he's not available. Oh, I don't care. Trade up for him. Oh, really? Just like that? Just press the trade up button, huh? Just that easy. Okay. Let's just press the trade up button. I don't know why I didn't think of that sooner. At some point, we should care about the players being good, right? Like, at some point, that has to matter. I understand we do a lot of discussion about roster building and positional value and things like that. But we do want good players, right? I hope we still do. Do or do not. There is no try. One last thing I want to talk about before we get out of here. There's been a lot of discussion over the last year or two about the Buffalo Bills' decision to be 12 personnel and specifically the pass happiness of the team. I mentioned to you a couple weeks ago that I had done a lot of correlation coefficients that have drawn a parallel between certain metrics and other metrics in the NFL. And I'd like to draw with you the correlation between pass rate over expected and EPA per play on offense. Basically, what is the correlation? How closely tied is pass happiness with effectiveness? The answer in 2023 was not super correlative. 0.29 is the correlation between pass rush over expected and EPA per play, which indicates an extremely small positive correlation. Being more pass happy affects it a little bit, but only a little bit. The NFL is still a pass and stop the pass league. But throwing the ball just every play, throwing it all the time, where that's all you do, you just lean all the way into it. You are at the top of the chart in pass rush over expected. You are the most pass happy you could possibly be. It just doesn't correlate directly and strongly with actually being good on offense. So yeah, do it if you're super successful doing it. But even the most successful teams like Buffalo, Miami, Baltimore, Green Bay, people who had strong offensive EPA per plays, Buffalo had a 1.2% pass rate over expected. Miami was negative 1.2. Baltimore was 0.3. Green Bay was 0.6. Detroit was negative 3.6. Everybody's favorite offensive coordinator, Ben Johnson, negative 3.6. Philadelphia, negative 0.5. The Rams, negative 2.1. Seattle, 1.1. Kansas City was 6.9. They were really pass happy. Did you know that they were behind Seattle, the Rams, the Eagles, Detroit, Green Bay, Baltimore, Miami, Buffalo, Dallas, and San Francisco when it comes to EPA per play on offense? They were one of the most pass-happy teams in the league. You know who number two was? Washington. Their offense was abysmal. It just doesn't correlate. Yes, do it. It's still a league that revolves around passing and stopping the pass. but passing the ball vastly more than it would be expected that you do, pass rush over expectation, doesn't necessarily mean you're going to have an overly effective offense. I know that's one of the discussions that everybody had about 12 personnel. Well, I want them to have 12 personnel, but I don't want them to run the ball more. I don't want them to run the ball a crazy amount either. But I also don't want them to just throw it 60 times a game. My balance is closer to 60-40 than it is to 80-20. Because I think that's where the optimal balance strikes to be able to be the most effective offense you could possibly be. And I think that the data backs that up. So that's the correlation between pass rate over expected and EPA per play. It's very small. And so I wanted to bring that up because it's going to be a topic of conversation all the way up. And I want you to remember this conversation when that conversation comes. Ladies and gentlemen, we did it. We hit the 20-minute mark, and I am out of here. Because that's the way the cookie crumbles. I'm Bruce Nolan, Buffalo Rumblings.